And good morning once again, and welcome to the other side of midnight. That kind of magical time between dusk and dawn. For the things we look at in daylight and re-examine after sunset kind of look a little different, particularly at this time of night when the consciousness quiets down and we can focus on, well, the future. As you know, this week I've been trying to do some programming that would kind of look ahead into what's going to happen in the next year or so, the year of 2016. It's amazing. I mean, 2015 just went by almost in a blink. So we've been doing these shows. I've had astrologers. I've had psychics. Tomorrow night or tomorrow morning, I will have an interesting futures panel, which we will detail, you know, a little later on. And that's going to look at all kinds of interesting things from different perspectives as we close out the old year and we look ahead to what's going to happen in this one. My guest this morning is on the show because I want to do some specific looking at the future. In particular, I want to look at the future of, and I know some of you are going to shudder when I say this, the election coming up. I mean, talk about a fascinating situation, absolutely fascinating situation, which frankly, as all the mainstream pundits are now saying, is unprecedented. Well, it could get even more unprecedented if some of the things that happened in the last few days are pursued to their logical conclusion. So let me talk about my guest. Stephen Bassett is the executive director of the Paradigm Research Group, founded in 1996 to end a government-imposed embargo on the truth behind the so-called UFO phenomenon. Stephen has spoken to audiences around the world about implications of formal disclosure by world governments of an extraterrestrial presence engaging the human race. He's given over 1,000 radio and television interviews, and PRG's advocacy work has been extensively covered by national and international media. In 2013, PRG produced a citizen hearing on disclosure at the National Press Club in Washington, and recently launched an initiative seeking the first hearings on Capitol Hill since 1968 regarding the extraterrestrial presence issue. PRG is also working to see that this issue is included in the ongoing presidential campaign, which of course leads me to introduce to my audience this morning, on the other side of midnight, Steve Bassett. Good morning, Steve. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Richard. Do you realize that it was almost 20 years ago to the day that I dropped into Weehawken to see you on my way to my volunteer job with John Mack?
Fascinating. I was trying to think this afternoon. We met first at a conference in Los Angeles when I was speaking, and I guess I was in the green room or something, and you came down to one of the tables, and you sat down, and we talked, and we talked, mm-hmm. and we planned, and we strategized, and we talked, and is that 20 years? Is that a generation?
Virtually to the day, and then I went to your second presentation that evening, which, if I remember, lasted 5 hours, and I sat next to the projector, and your projector, your remote wouldn't work with it,
mm-hmm.
and so I basically flipped the slides for you through that whole 4 or 5 hours.
What an intro!
And so it began.
You know, the thing that I was struck by this afternoon, when I was younger, much younger, my brothers and sisters, you know, 4 kids, 2 boys, 2 girls, 2 parents, and we had family in New Jersey, and we lived in places like Indiana in those years. And we would drive from Indiana all the way to New Jersey on a narrow 2-laned road. This was before the era of freeways. This is before the era of the Eisenhower Interstate Initiatives and all that. So to get anywhere in the country, you really had to want to drive. And I remember on some of those trips, you know, as the time got interminable, when you're 4 kids in a car and you've been on the road for 2 days, and we kept saying, are we there yet? Are we there yet? So here's my question, Steve. Based on what happened with Secretary Clinton last week, are we there yet?
Oh, very nice segue quality. we are, well, you know, all activism is generally takes a long time on major issues. No major issues have been resolved quickly. You look at almost any of the significant social movements of the 20th century, and you're looking at 40, 50, 60, 70 years. So it's like running a marathon. It goes on forever, and as you're halfway through it, it seems like you'll never get it done. And then you start to realize you're getting close to the finish line. Now, in a marathon, the finish line is fixed. In this particular type of marathon, like in activism, the government or the powers that be do have the ability on time to time to move the finish line back. But we are, in my view, I can see the finish line ahead. I can see those flags waving. See some people, a bunch of people standing on the side of the road.
So we have entered we've entered the end game.
Entered, I believe, the end game of this chess game, absolutely. And of course, we'll talk about that.
For those people that haven't been following this, what are you and I actually talking about? We're talking about the cover up of the human race in the context of an extraterrestrial presence, both in this solar system and far, far away, galaxies notwithstanding, and the fact that the U.S. government has been sitting on this information in terms of officially acknowledging what every intelligent observer and investigator who looks at this independently comes to the conclusion thereof, that we are not alone. But the government has not said anything except the negative on that. And then last week, a candidate running for president responded, I think for the first time in decades, maybe since Jimmy Carter, to questions on UFOs, and she made some very remarkably intriguing statements. So pick it up from there.
Well, yeah, the first president to even touch on the subject, and it was UFOs back then, was Carter in 76. And he didn't say too much, but he got the public's attention. There was a lot of interest. He got thousands of letters, and even tried to – and he got a study underway, brought some people in. Let's just say that the rest of the government was not enthusiastic about that. He didn't have any access to anything.
Well, NASA really was absolutely adamantly opposed. In fact, I think Fletcher went out front and said, we're not really equipped to do this, which, like, is if you aren't, who is?
CIA wasn't interested either, and that was run by George H.W. Bush at the time.
Interesting.
So, and in other words, Carter learned very quickly that as far as the ET issue is concerned, and maybe some other things, he wasn't read in. He didn't have clearance, which I'm sure was upsetting for him. That was 76, so we're talking almost 40 years ago. That is 40 years ago.
See, to a lot of people, that sounds like science fiction. The president of the United States, duly elected by 300 million plus or minus, takes office, begins to ask questions about what's going on in his government. It's now his government for 4 years. And you say he's not read in, meaning his security clearance as established by the alphabet agencies is not deemed high enough, and he is such a transitory individual, 4 years, and the government goes on, he's not able to look at this classified information on potential extraterrestrial reality?
You can even broaden that. One of the great concerns that the American people should have is that since Kennedy, probably starting with Kennedy, more and more projects, more and more activities being conducted within the secret world, the black budget world, have been yanked from under the Congress and the president. It's kind of a gradual process. The ET issue wasn't really yanked out until probably Kennedy. I think Nixon had a little access, but overall, it was just no longer under oversight.
Well, Nixon's access seemed to be Jackie Gleason.
Well, he showed Gleason some stuff, so he had some access. But so that may have been a brief period where there was some access for him. But I'm just saying, in general, what's happened is the national security state has been removing this, that, and whatever out from under the Congress and the president because, one, they don't like politics. the politics in the U.S. has gone bad, and these people are serious men and women who are concerned about our national security, but maybe a little less concerned about the fact that this is a full-fledged constitutional breach. And as a result, we've got a real problem that needs to be resolved. Now, as it happens, the ET issue is easily the most important, most profound of the issues which has been pulled out from under congressional and White House oversight. And that is the one that probably will break this pattern. It will be the game changer that may start a process where we get things back into balance. But that is the fact. And so 40 years go by, and a whole lot of effort has gone into, I can assure you, getting us to this day, getting us to December the 30th, when for the second time a presidential candidate spoke to the issue. But obviously, 40 years and everything that's happened in that time, it's a wholly different ballgame for Secretary Clinton to speak to it than it was Jimmy Carter in 77.
Mm.
Now, this is a breakthrough. It is not the breakthrough, but it is close.
Why do you say it's a breakthrough? I mean, Bill Clinton has made noises about UFOs in Belfast a few years ago. There were close-up shots of Hillary. When Bill was talking about, remember the letter from, what was his name, Kevin or whatever, that, you know, he
the
pretended.
Irish speech.
Yeah. And the close-up, the camera, you know, the director was very sharp because he took close-ups of Hillary sitting in the front row as Bill, the president, is standing up by the Christmas tree in Aberdeen talking about UFOs, and Hillary was not a happy camper.
Probably wasn't. Though there have been lots of things that have happened, dress rehearsals, trial balloons, Rockefeller Initiative, Podesta's call for the release of the UFO files, Bill Richardson's foreword to Roswell Dig Diaries, and then, you know, other things have happened recently. So, but all of that, in my opinion, is they aren't breakthroughs, but they are indicators. The reason why what happened on December the 30th was a breakthrough was, one, it was a presidential candidate. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Two, it was done in the middle of the campaign. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Three, it was done after a series of events involving her campaign chairman, her husband, on talk shows and so forth that added much more importance to this. But probably the most important thing, frankly, is what she said. And I can assure you what she said was well beyond anything Jimmy Carter said. And the thing that I think your audience needs to understand is that when these things are done, they're always done with a smile because that's just necessary. You don't talk about this without smiling, no matter how serious you may be. That's an aspect of the truth embargo. So what's significant here is – the what she said and the context. Now, for most people that don't know all the backstory, it's perfectly understandable that they hear one of these things, they sense a little levity, and they assume this is all a joke.
That's how CNN played it.
Yeah, I get that, but you see, we know the backstory, and if the public knew the full backstory, which are obviously working very hard to get out to them, they would realize that this is anything but a joke. So. Let's quickly review what happened.
Well, hang on one second. If people want to follow along, they have to go to othersideofmidnight.com, click in the upper right-hand corner, Radio with Pictures. That takes you to Steve's page tonight, the guest page. Link number one is the Conway Daily Sun and the story that came out on December 30th from the editorial board, written actually by a guy named Damon Steer, reporting on their conversation with candidate Clinton.
Mm-hmm. That's one good link. And then another important link is the congressional hearing status, which I've got the Rockefeller Initiative link. But if you go to paradigmresearchgroup.org, the main site, at the bottom is a link to the congressional hearing status where you can see a huge amount of information, links, coverage directly pertaining to the political initiative underway in Washington. Now, having said that, here's what went down. And this was all planned. You can be almost certain this was planned.
You mean the question with reporter Damon Steer was actually a planted question?
I don't know if it's a planted question, but the fact that she went on the record and spoke about this was I think carefully planned. In fact, there
and seemed not to be blindsided. It's like she had answers prepared.
Oh, of course. And so there's a lot that's happened leading up to this, which is why I believe this was planned and very well planned. And so what happened is Secretary Clinton and her team, which the key person is John Podesta, made the decision that under the pressure that they're getting on the Rockefeller Initiative, which we'll go into later, that she was going to have to speak. The question is when. And so what did they do? They chose a small paper in New Hampshire in the middle of the holidays, December the 30th, just before New Year's. Mm. Everybody's home. The reporters are home. The Congress is out of session.
Well, if you want to go on the record but bury it, that's exactly when you want to do it. Literally the night before Christmas, before New Year's Eve.
But the issue wasn't burying it. Because they couldn't bury it, but what they're doing is if you're going to put up a trial balloon to find out how intense the media reaction will be, then that's when you do it. And then you have a little time and you see where it goes. You also will find out how much the advocacy movement is going to do with it. Are they going to jump on it immediately? In other words, it's a trial balloon to find out what the response is going to be so they can decide whether they're going to go further. Mm-hmm. In that sense, it was perfectly done. Now, what did they learn? Well, they learned that it went international. Very quickly. I have logged in about 80 articles. I have checked about 250 foreign language articles on it were done. A couple of hundred TV and radio stations did their usual piece, and about 100 mainstream media pieces, including a number of right-wing publications like the Daily Caller and Breitbart and WorldNet Daily and Red State. So the thing is virtually all over the place. So they found that out. They also found that PRG responded very quickly. We put out a full press release. We put out to our list and then, of course, punched it up on hundreds of group sites on Facebook. So, okay, what they have found out so far, 9 days later, is that this thing definitely took off and it's in play. Now, they've also noticed that the New York Times hasn't stepped into it. The Washington Post hasn't stepped into it.
Nope.
And I'm not getting any calls from CNN or ABC or NBC. So it hasn't gone to that level yet. But it's early. It's only the 8th. But let's get back to what happened here. This is what people – and I'm going to analyze this for people a little bit. If they're looking at the article, they'll actually see some of this. Steer starts out by saying that he had talked to her in 2007. He brought this up before in that campaign in 2007. Well, at that time, PRG was also trying to get the Rockefeller Initiative into the presidential campaign. Didn't have the platform it needed, wasn't in a strong enough position. But I actually was on Fox News in July of 2007 and actually brought it up. And we talked about the Rockefeller Initiative. Nobody else picked up on it, kind of fell flat. However, it's interesting that all of those efforts to bring that Rockefeller Initiative into play may have helped lead to the questions that were asked later that year in October in Philadelphia. That's when Tim Russert asked that pretty straightforward question of Kucinich and then bounced over to Obama. So we sort of got it in play back then. So that was kind of notable. And this guy asked her those questions, and lo and behold, he is at the paper. So if they knew that he had been transferred over to that paper, which is the Conway Daily Sun, from where he was before, she would have almost been certain that he was going to bring it up. But who knows? Mm-hmm. So anyway, so that's kind of the first thing. And then as they chat about that, she makes this statement. Yes, I'm going to get to the bottom of it, meaning the UFO question. Now, that is a pretty bold statement, right? I'm not going to look into it. I'm going to get to the bottom of it.
Yeah, it's kind of like Obama on health care. Everybody the president tries, and he does it. She's saying that she's going to be the first president to actually solve this, to make it public. Well, is that what that means?
It means to get to the bottom of the issue, whether it's true, whether it's not true, find out information. But what's important is this candidate, this leading candidate to be president, has basically sent a message to the Pentagon that, if I'm president, I may be coming your way. Okay, so that was notable. I saw that.
Yeah, he says here that she said it with enthusiasm.
Yes, he did. And then she mentions that back in 2007, her husband had mentioned that the number one topic of freedom of information request to her husband's library was, in fact, on UFOs. Well, that's true. And one of the people that was behind many of those was Grant Cameron, who was also seeking more information related to the Rockefeller Initiative. Grant Cameron is the Canadian researcher that in the late 2000 was able to get a FOIA request in just in time to the Office of Science and Technology Policy, and somebody down there screwed up and sent him 1,000 pages of documents, which it turns out confirmed the whole Rockefeller Initiative, which we then delivered to the Washington Post and the USA Today, who threw them in the trash. Then we put them up on the internet where they've been for the last 15 years, and the media still hasn't covered them. But nevertheless, again, and by the way, UFOs in general have been the largest genre of submissions to FOIA going back to its original creation. So she notes that. Then she mentions that, brings up the fact that Bill Clinton had been on the Jimmy Kimmel Show April 2, 2014. And I can tell you more about that later, right? And he mentions about, well, I hope it's not Independence Day, right? You're referring to the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he says, when asked about her husband's nonchalant comment about contact with the third kind, he kind of misstates that a little bit. She says, and this is the sentence that is going to have the most implications.
It's so resonant. Good grief.
It's a big one. She says, I think we have been visited already. We don't know for sure. Now, let me tell you.
Now, how can that be a factual statement?
It was a factual statement. She says, I think.
We don't know for sure. If she knows anything, how does she not know for sure?
The point is that Hillary Clinton knows there's an extraterrestrial presence. She's been tipped off by John Podesta.
Of course she has to.
This isn't about you know, providing factual answers to questions. This is a very complex political dance that's going on as they grapple with the problem of how to engage the issue in a way that will not overly damage their campaign. But nevertheless, that's what she said. No presidential candidate or president of the United States has ever said that. All right?
No.
Now, let's put that in context to what Obama—
Well, Carter never said we may have been visited.
No, no. No presidential candidate has ever done that. So that was—
And she's not just a candidate. She was Secretary of State. Remember when Hillary called all the ambassadors back to Washington 3 years ago? Mm-hmm. Every ambassador we had all over the world came back for 1 week in Washington to have in-person meetings. What do you suspect might have been discussed in those meetings?
I don't know, Richard, but I know that as she's been a Secretary of State, she's a powerful person, she's been a senator, and she's the wife of the president. I cannot believe that somebody sympathetic has tipped her off. She didn't already know that the ET presence is real. Now, understand, being tipped off by somebody inside is not the same thing as being given a tour of Area 51 or underground facilities. It doesn't mean access to classified information. It just means, you know, wink, wink, nod, nod, you know, Secretary Clinton, you know, this is real. I believe, of course, she knows that. So then, he goes on a little further, and Kimmel mentions to her that Bill Clinton on Jimmy Kimmel had promised that if he did know about the extraterrestrials, he would tell us. And, of course, Clinton said he would, which elicited a very powerful amount of applause from Kimmel's audience, which a lot of people didn't note. You know, mm-hmm. We're supposedly not ready for this, but it seems like everybody in Kimmel's audience that night was. And so then he goes on to say that, okay, while at the Sun, then she does something very important. While she's talking to them, she brings up Podesta.
Mm.
All right. And she mentions that John Podesta is a huge fan of the UFO quote lore. And she said that he enjoys a sci-fi show on FX, that's called The X-Files, which he's a big fan of. And he mentions Chief of Staff to Bill Clinton. Now, understand, she hasn't referred to the Rockefeller Initiative formally in any way, has
No,
she?
And we will get to that in the next segment.
Sure. But so she's dancing around it because she's brought it up. Now, by doing that, by mentioning Podesta in that same interview, she has hooked herself to the two previous Podesta links.
Mm.
From the last 12 months, and also back to Podesta's call for the release of the files in 2002-2003. In other words, what she's saying is, I'm not upset with Podesta's tweets. I'm not upset with the positions he's taken. They were not jokes.
No, she's embracing Podesta.
Exactly.
Now, so do you happen to have his last tweet?
Yeah, of course.
Around there? Okay, so why don't you read it to folks, because they may not remember from the previous show we did on this.
All right. Well, there's two tweets that Podesta put out that are highly significant, and for the unaware, would look like humor, but I assure you they're not. The first one was profound. I think this was the point at which they had arrived at the decision that they were in fact going to have to test the waters and see what happens.
When you say they, who's they?
Meaning the Clinton team.
Okay.
Which includes Podesta, President Clinton, other advisors, close people to him, like perhaps Bill Richardson.
Yeah, but Podesta used to work for Clinton. Then there was a hiatus, and then he was called back into government service by the president, by Obama.
Sure.
To serve as head
now
of
he works for Hillary.
Her service as head of transition team. Then he disappears again. Then he comes back to the White House to serve as kind of like an advisor or whatever. Then he quits again to go to the Clinton campaign. And it's when he quits, he sends out this tweet.
But before we talk about the tweet, understand Podesta has now worked at a high-level position with all three of these people. He is the common thread. He is the strategist here. Mm-hmm. He is the absolute linchpin behind all of this. So he does something extraordinary. He has just finished up his 11-month stint as an advisor to Obama, which nobody understood why. It wasn't clear what he was advising him about. There seemed no outward logic to it, other than as an advisor to the president in the White House, he could speak with the president at length without any concerns of those conversations being anything but private.
As because of executive privilege.
Yes, exactly. But whatever. He does this 11 months, and so he's leaving the job. It's his last day. He's on the way out the door, on his way to become the chairman of the leading candidate to be president, who is going to have to spend at least $1 billion of other people's money to achieve the White House. And on the way out, he puts this tweet up. Finally, my biggest failure of 2014, once again not securing the hashtag disclosure of UFO files. Hashtag the truth is still out there. CC New York Times doubt, meaning Marine doubt.
Mm-hmm.
Now, again, people that don't know what's going on here read that and don't see too much. I know what's going on. I see a huge amount. First of all, he is clearly referring back to his two efforts to call for the UFO files to be released in 2002-2003 at the National Press Club. And he's referring back to the Rockefeller Initiative when, you know, Rockefeller was tasking Clinton to get the files released, and he was the front guy on that.
This was Lawrence Rockefeller.
That's all the way back 93-96. So he starts out that second sentence. Once again, he's saying, I've tried to do this before and obviously didn't happen. And I regret that it didn't happen in 2014, which immediately implies that he tried to do something, failed, which I assume was because nobody at the Pentagon is going to let them have anything.
I'll tell you what, hold it there.
Yeah.
We're at the bottom of the hour. My guest this morning is Steve Bassett. We're discussing events which happened just a few days ago. Perhaps a crack in the glacier. Perhaps, finally, after all these decades, the censorship, the cover-up, the suppression of the reality of who's out there and our relationship to them and theirs to us, maybe all of that is coming to the next phase, the end game, as I refer to it. Anyway, you're on the other side of midnight. My name is Richard C. Hoagland. We shall come back to Steve Bassett when we return. And we are back with my guest this morning, Steve Bassett. Steve, so continue taking apart the Secretary's statement, because I, too, believe this represents a major step forward and a presage of things to come, maybe not that long from now.
No, you're right. So that was a very significant tweet with significant consequences. Nobody who is about to take over the job that he was about to take would joke about the extraterrestrial issue. It just doesn't happen. So that was February the 13th. March the 13th, a month later, that's when Obama went on Jimmy Kimmel and arranged to be asked the exact same question that President Clinton was asked in April of the previous year. That was no accident. And okay, now by the way, all of this is happening at the same time that in the background, PRG is kicking up a lot of dust in Washington, D.C., engaging all kinds of media, putting out press releases, speaking with staffers on both the House and Senate side regarding hearings. And so this isn't in a vacuum. And I happen to believe this their process is a response to and being driven to some degree by PRG's activity. So a couple months go by. I'm waiting to see what's going to happen next. And then a beaut. 7 days before the first Democratic debate, primary debate.
Roughly when?
This would have been about September 29. I think the debate was early October.
Of last
year. Last year. And a couple of days after Lena Dunham, the actress, a millennial, sort of a millennial outreach on the part of the secretary, interviewed Secretary Clinton. 2 days later, John Podesta puts out another tweet. Great interview, Lena Dunham, but Lena, ask her about aliens next time. Hashtag the truth is out there. CC Hillary Clinton.
How can the mainstream press look at this and not say, what the hell is going on?
Because they've had 67 years of practice and not properly dealing with this. There's a truth embargo underway. That's the deal. And the job of the advocacy movement is to bust that open. Nevertheless, so
you're saying in city rooms and publishing offices and editorial boards all across the country, there basically is a prescription on the wall somewhere in big letters that says, do not take UFO stories seriously! Exclamation point.
Not on the wall. The best analogy I can give you is this. 54 years ago, the U.S. government put an embargo on Cuba. Maybe it was justified. There was the Cuban Missile Crisis. They were angry. But that embargo should have ended in 1992. Everybody knows that. But it finally ended last year.
Mm-hmm.
And so what was that about? Well, it was this. It was like, plenty of people knew there was an island down there. But you couldn't go there, right? You didn't go there. If you went there, you could be arrested. You could be fined. People would accuse you of being a communist sympathizer. It was you'd be stigmatized. And so people just didn't go. And the press wasn't writing extensive articles and commentary about how we should end that embargo. It was understood. It was embargoed. It's exactly the same thing. This issue was embargoed by the government, and it was made quite clear early on that it's not a good idea to go there. And after that sits for 40 or 50 years, it becomes institutionalized. You don't have to send emails every other day. They just sort of know you don't go there, or at least you don't go beyond a certain point. And that's the way it works. It's very effective. Government's been doing it for thousands of years. So anyway, so he does this tweet. Now, this gets heavy coverage, as the first tweet did.
Right? We're back to Podesta.
Exactly. And so as far as I was concerned, what that tweet was about was his way of casually, subtly, because he couldn't just call up CBS News and say, hey, why don't you guys ask my client about extraterrestrials? No way.
Hmm.
This was his way of tipping off. Go ahead and ask her. So what happens? 3 months go by, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she gets asked. All right. Now, she could have gone off the record. She could have said, look, let's go off the record. I'll chat. I know you're interested. We'll chat for a while. I don't mind. No, she didn't go off the record. And she answers those questions. Maybe she's smiling. That's fine. I'm not surprised at that. But she makes the statement she does make. We're virtually guaranteed to create a story if the media was prepared to run with it. And what they found out is the media was very prepared to run with it. And I will give credit to every internet radio show and every researcher and every book that's been written and everybody else that's been pushing this issue for 50 years to the readiness of the press to run with this story. And so that's on December 30.
Okay, hang on a second. If she does this for the Conway newspaper on the 30th, mm-hmm. Chris Matthews taped an interview with her, which he ran Monday. First interview of the new year and all that. He didn't ask anything about this. Now, was that taped before the Conway editorial board meeting, or was it after?
No, it wasn't. And Chris Matthews has resisted every effort for the last 20 years to deal with this issue.
Do you want to hear something interesting about Chris Matthews?
Mm-hmm.
I gave him a copy of my book, Dark Mission, Secret History of NASA, in exchange for a copy of his book. I've read his book. I don't know whether he's read mine yet.
Probably not. Look, the only one of the news programs, the national news programs, that picked up on it was a light piece in CNN.
Mm-hmm. And CNN, as I said before, treated it as a joke.
Right. Fox, MSNBC, no. Of course, all the networks, no. What I have found rather interesting, and I have a theory about it, is Drudge.
Oh.
These articles are all over the place, and I'm thinking Drudge is going to link to this, particularly because it's actually being covered in right-wing public state. I'm thinking he is going to – because obviously this could be embarrassing for her. He is still – that Drudge report has still not linked to that story, which is fascinating.
And why do you think that is?
Well, okay.
Was she off the reservation?
No. This is my theory.
Okay.
If you can go all the way back to the Rockefeller Initiative, which was not totally unknown at the time. The press did virtually no coverage on it, but it wasn't totally unknown. I mean, it's going on in the White House for 3 years. And continue on up to Podesta's statements, right? Understanding that Podesta has been literally locked with the Clinton team from the beginning. In 2002, 2003, Bill Richardson's comments in his foreword to the Roswell Dig Diaries, where he basically says, I think we need to reinvestigate Roswell.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, all of that's happened since. The comments that – similar comments to the Kimmel Show were made by Clinton back in 2007 in Hong Kong.
Mm.
In all of this, not a single member of the Republican Party or the DNC or the RNC has ever attacked the Clintons on the ET issue.
Including Ted Cruz, who happens now to be chairman of the Senate Committee on Space.
And includes all the candidates, but we're talking about a period of almost 14 years. They have never attacked him. Now, understand, everyone sort of knows that the Republicans and conservatives are more than happy to attack the Clintons on anything.
Okay, let me ask you this really interesting question. Just hit me. Trump has obviously got Hillary in his sights, and he's bringing in Bill because he actually explained it kind of well that, they went there with him being a person who was, sexually active, whatever you want to call it. So he figured it was fair game to go after Bill. And
exactly.
Okay. If Trump is going after the Clintons, particularly her, obviously, because she's the candidate, why doesn't he take this statement to the Conway newspaper and parade it as an example of her silliness, her stupidity, her craziness, her hippiness,
sure,
whatever you want to do? Why has he been totally silent on something that would have been open season in any other campaign?
Well, first of all, the month's not over yet. Secondly, Trump may not have been following some of the previous stuff, like the tweets and so forth. But, of course, he knows about the the December 30 stuff.
That's what I'm talking about.
Nine days ago. But, it's a very good point. And let me complete my other statement, and I'll cook the two together. The only explanation I can give for the fact that the Republicans have completely given the Clinton world a pass on the ET issue is because there are people – in the Republican Party at the high levels, the strategists, the thinkers, the inside people, the ones with the money. And many of these Republicans are very close to the Pentagon, very close to military and intelligence world. As you know, they're much more supportive than the Democrats. They have their connections there. And I believe that these individuals are fully aware there's an extraterrestrial presence. Now, if you know that, And you send the word down, let's go after the Clintons over this UFO stuff and tinfoil hat them, but you know that the phenomenon is actually real. Mm-hmm. What if that then blows out into the public domain? You have just cut your legs off. And so it is a very powerful indicator of the validity of this.
That's a very interesting analysis. In other words, absence of evidence is not evidence of absence.
Exactly. So that's a theory I have. Now, there is now, and again, the way all this is coming together synchronistically is just so cool.
Well, again, for people to know what we're talking about, the first woman candidate for president of the United States, spouse of a former president of the United States who has made interesting assertions in various time frames on this issue, has, for some reason, in the middle of the campaign, right before Iowa and New Hampshire, has put UFOs on the record as a campaign discussion subject, and that's why we're having this conversation tonight.
Yeah.
Because you and I think, in sync, this presages something much more amazing to come.
Well, people must continue to remind themselves as they listen to these kind of stories. There is an extraterrestrial presence.
Well, that's the reality behind the whole discussion.
Yeah, there is an extraterrestrial presence, and one has to understand that fact is affecting these people's actions all of the time. So what is wonderfully interesting about what's happening right now is that in the last – about this exact same time that we're leading up to the interview in New Hampshire is when let me tell you how synchronistic it is. On December the 30th, the morning of the 30th, the Washington Post did a full article on President Clinton's girlfriends,
mm-hmm.
which essentially completely green-lighted everybody on the left and the right to ask those questions in the campaign.
Yeah.
He then went on a whole, days and days of interviews saying that, I'm going there, it's in play now, and now the Washington Post has just did another article on them, and the girlfriends, these women are turning up all over the place, and the whole issue is that, he's going to campaign for her, he is still a major player, and therefore, all of this that happened back in 1992, 3-4, and even leading into the presidency is fair game. And of course, it is all a bummer. It's all negative. I mean, these Ken Starr report, there are still people to this day that haven't recovered from having to read that. So it's just really terrible.
See,
and yet she is going to have to deal with it.
See, the thing that intrigues me here is that Trump is making a big play, say that rapidly three times,
mm-hmm.
in Iowa for the evangelical vote. Rick Santorum won in a surprising upset the evangelical vote the last time we had a presidential campaign, a primary season like this. So mm-hmm. Trump is trying to appeal to evangelicals. Why would he not, if he's trying to edge out a win in Iowa and also drive another nail in Clinton's coffin, why wouldn't he hold up her UFO interest and conversation as an example of flirting with satanic whatever, because that's the idea on that side among a lot of people, that anything dealing with extraterrestrials is basically dealing with the devil. So why is he avoiding this huge issue? It's like this huge gap in his strategy to pummel Clinton when she's now so vulnerable, but he's avoiding the subject totally.
It's a very valid question, and let me respond this way. One of the and let me tell you my thoughts about Donald Trump. Not partisan politics, though. I don't go there, as you know. But when I was a kid, I read a lot of science fiction, and one of the classic science fiction trilogies of all time was the Foundation trilogy by Isaac Asimov.
Mm-hmm.
Almost everybody that is interested in science fiction read that.
Know it well.
And, of course, it's still around. Well, in that trilogy, I think it was the second book, one of the features of that book was that an individual turned up that was called the Mule.
Mm.
And the Mule was a mutant.
Yep.
And had significant psychic powers.
Yep.
And so forth. And as a result, he completely upset the balance of the entire galaxy, which was being monitored and measured and balanced by the mathematicians. and through everything
of the Harry of the Harry Seldon Foundation.
Exactly. And so in my view, I see Donald Trump as the mule. He is this very unusual person that has come out of really come out of left field, and he's turning everything upside down. So while any one of those 12 candidates on the Republican side could bring this up, not just Donald Trump, I assure you, if there's ever a group that's likely to do it, it's this group. But Donald Trump would be the first candidate.
Well, the reason I think about Trump is because Trump has taken aim at Clinton. The other candidates are still fighting among themselves as to who's going to be top dog, you know, conventional conservative, radical conservative, in crowd, out crowd. He's the only candidate, because he's got the luxury of the numbers, to basically say, I'm going to go after the candidate in the general election that's probably going to be my opponent. And he's there's no holds barred except for this issue.
So far, and understand, the Clinton scandals of the 80s and 90s were obviously highly well known, certainly to him, heavily publicized. The ET issue, I have a feeling, is kind of outside and has been outside Donald Trump's strike zone. He really hasn't been paying much attention to it. And I think that
Yeah, but wait. When the campaign manager, what's Podesta's title?
He's chairman of the campaign.
Chairman of the campaign. If the chairman of the campaign keeps making these statements about ETs, UFOs, and I'm sorry I didn't do this and I didn't do this, and then the candidate comes and wraps her arms around Podesta and says, yes, he's a good guy, and he's really focused on this, and yes, I'm going to open up this and that study. Why is Trump so incredibly silent when this has been the silly factor to basically defibrillate every other candidate going back decades?
Well, I think the answer is this. The tweets by Podesta were interesting, but not enough to base a strategy. This has only been 9 days since she gave that interview. Mm-hmm. And, of course, he's in the middle of a campaign. He's got campaign stops.
Yeah, but he's been known to tweet in the middle of the night on things that are real time. Remember all his weird bathroom humor about her? Nothing is out of bounds. So why is this out of bounds so far?
Well, because this is not some trivial thing like going to the bathroom. I'm sure his advisors would tell him right away, look, this is heavy-duty stuff, so, you know, take a little time. So I'm not surprised that he hasn't moved on it yet, but, again, the month is early. It's very possible that Trump is going to go there, and we'll find out fairly soon, because there's more articles coming. There's a big article coming out in the New York Observer.
Would you agree that if he does that, this takes off to a totally new level?
The moment Trump, if Donald Trump decides that he is going to hit the Clinton campaign over the head on her, quote, remarks regarding the phenomena, he virtually licensed every single reporter in the country to ask her about it, and which is, of course, what they've anticipated coming. And when that happens, she only has one place to go now. And that is to give the bold, cold truth, right? What happened? Explain it. Go into detail. Probably say some very provocative things. And if she's smart, in order to pretty much protect herself, she'll throw the Pentagon under the bus. Meaning, you know, we couldn't do anything. They wouldn't give us anything. And this was really a serious problem.
During Bill's administration?
Exactly. Okay. And any time since.
Perfect time then to segue into the Rockefeller Initiative. We've been teasing people, what's the Rockefeller Initiative, for everybody who wasn't listening to our earlier shows?
It is the historical event which I believe, thanks to Grant Cameron, will ultimately end the truth embargo. Right? And it's not too complicated. Lawrence Rockefeller had been funding research into the UFO phenomena for a number of years. He'd even helped fund John Mack at Harvard. Mm-hmm. He was very interested, and he was knowledgeable. When you're a billionaire Rockefeller, I think you can have contacts. You can kind of find out what's going on. You call up some people, you know, and they say, yeah, Lawrence, it's definitely real. They got bodies here. They got this, that, and every, but, you know, it's classified beyond measure. Whatever. He knows. He's interested. But he also knew, because it's quite logical, that once the Cold War was ended, the opportunity to possibly finally get this to the public arose. right? That was the principal problem. The Cold War was always the barrier to a consensus on this. And so the Cold War is over, in the middle of the Bush administration, but there was also a war going on. And so he made the decision, whoever won the next election, he was going to approach them with the idea of, let's get the files out, let's get this resolved.
This is Lawrence Rockefeller.
Lawrence Rockefeller. In fact, I know from talking to some of the principals that if Bush had won, he was going to approach him. Now, as it happened, Clinton won, and he is friends with the Clinton. In fact, he was a Democrat. He supported the Democratic National Committee. So okay, fine. It's even better in a way, though actually not better, because Clinton was hated by the military intelligence complex. Mm. So, but anyway, he goes in there. He approaches them on March the 29th. With a letter from his attorney to John Gibbons, the science advisor, to initiate an effort to present to the president reports, letters, what have you, making the case to release all the UFO files and grant amnesty to witnesses, because it's time for the people to know the truth about this.
This is back in 92, right?
No, it's 93. Starts in March the 23rd, 1993.
Okay.
Just shortly, a month after he was, he didn't waste any time. It's a month after the inauguration. So, or actually 2 months after the inauguration. So this – and thus begins an effort. Meetings were held. They met with Rockefeller at his ranch in 95. A bunch of researchers met with Rockefeller at his ranch in 94. There were reports written, studies, whatever. Goes on for 3 years. Now, it doesn't succeed, most likely, because again, not only is this – does the military intelligence complex classify this above the president now, but – Bill Clinton was a special case. I mean, the Pentagon wouldn't have poured water on him if he was on fire. And so he was going to get nothing. And so they're going into the 96 election, and this thing is not going anywhere, so they drop it, right? And of course, not only is he trying to win that election, but he knows full well his wife wants to run for president too. So they all made a decision.
Do you think she wanted to run way back then?
Yeah, absolutely. So they all made a decision that, look, nothing came from this. The press never covered it. Let's just never speak of it again. Okay? Let's just never speak of it again. In other words, whatever the implications are.
I mean, there is a photograph taken on Rockefeller's ranch in, what, Wyoming?
Yeah.
Showing Hillary clutching a book, a very interesting book with a cover title that's very provocative.
Yeah, and there's a nice story behind that. By the way, if you go to paradigmresearchgroup.org and click on the Hillary graphic, it'll take you right to the Rockefeller Initiative page. You can see the documents. You can see the photos. You can see it all. It's all there. And that's been – I've given that link to I don't know how many journalists over the years. It's out there. Plenty of people know about it. So,
and they're all waiting for a trigger event to write about.
They're waiting for the leash to be – leash to come off. Absolutely. So essentially –
But wasn't this Conway interview a major breakthrough in the leash?
It was significant. It wasn't quite strong enough to cut the leash, but it definitely loosened it. And so the next step, as I say, is the January 17th NBC debate. Now, there's going to be more articles coming out. Mother Jones is going to have a substantial article on what's going on here, including PRG, in a short while. The New York Observer is doing an extensive article. That comes out Monday. There's more in the works.
Are you talking to David Korn?
No.
Oh, okay.
Elsewhere. Okay. David, I'd like to get to David Korn, but he's tricky because he's a huge Clinton supporter. there's going to be
but
more
this could make her presidency. If you're a huge supporter, well, it depends on how it's handled.
It's a huge political risk. The point is that a lot more is going to happen between now and the 17th, and I just can't imagine that the NBC people are going to be so obtuse or somehow ignore all of this. And ask her, which they almost certainly will, a question about her husband's ex-girlfriends and not ask her about the Conway interview. I just can't imagine it. So I'm going to put that at around 75 to 80% that question gets asked. And if it does, on January the 17th, Sunday night, tune in. The next words that come out of her mouth may very well make history.
Is there a way that this audience, via email, could paper the country with that question so it has to be asked by NBC that night?
Well, it's kind of a two-edged sword. I have a website called million facts on Washington, right? Mm-hmm. And it's millionfacts.org, millionfacts.org. And I've used it for a lot of things. Right now, we have used it since November the 4th of 2014. A group of people that are working from that site have generated nearly 2.5 million tweets that have gone to members of Congress, the candidates, and the about 500 media handles that we have archived. And all of these handles are right there at Million Facts. I'm sorry. Factsonwashington.org. God, I'm on the side. Factsonwashington.org.
And that is linked through PRG.
Yeah, it's on one of the internal pages, but it's best to just go to factsonwashington.org.
Okay.
Now, the problem is that we have saturated them with so many tweets that we have sort of used that up, which is to say, you know, we've got a lot of them pissed off at us. There's been some blocks, but we rained it down on them. So, you know, we got the message out there.
What if a tweet campaign that was aimed at Donald Trump and letting him know this is a fertile target were sent?
This is the point I was about to make. If what I wouldn't mind seeing, all right, is if people were to go to factsonwashington.org and they scroll, you know, they go past the top page, and they get into the core page, they'll see some interesting information, and if they scroll down, they will see the complete Twitter handle archive there, which includes MSNBC, NBC. There's I don't know, we've got about 28, 29 of – and these are all political handles. These are political reporters and editors. I wouldn't mind seeing some light tweeting, you know, not bury them because, you know –
Well, it's got to become a signal in the noise. I tell you, hold it there. Speaking of signals and noise, we're at the top of the hour. My guest this morning is Steve Bassett. We're discussing what could well be the beginning of the end, or at least the beginning of the end game. The 40, 50, 70, almost 100-year cover-up, if you look at all the permutations going back to Tesla and Marconi and all that. Is it possible that in this election, this presidential election, the election of 2016, we finally might get some definitive statements by candidates on all sides of the issue? Maybe even Donald Trump getting into the act? As my grandmother used to say, from your lips to God's ear. You're on the other side of midnight. My name is Richard C. Hoagland. That's Bobby Bright in the background, all the way from Australia. We shall return. And we are back. Steve, please continue. Hello?
Sorry. I was on mute. If people wanted to send some light tweets, not bury them, but some light tweets to the NBC handles, MSNBC, NBC, suggesting that this is a question that needs to be asked of Secretary Clinton. They may want to put a link to the Conway article, easy enough to do, into their Twitters. Their tweets, that could be helpful. Just don't get too carried away. And if they want to send a similar message to the political candidates, which I also have listed there at factsonwashington.org, they might send it in. Again, respectful, straightforward, meaning, you know, this is an important issue. Probably you should bring it up. You should talk about it. This could be helpful, right? I just don't want people to go nuts.
But you can't control how things go viral on the internet.
But you can recommend. I can recommend.
Yeah, you can recommend.
I'm just, you know, I'm trying. So,
look, to me, any noise is useful because the more noise there is, the more reporters will take a look at the story. It's been now sanctified by their own, you know, the editorial board. It wasn't just a reporter. It was the editorial board of the Conway paper, and it appeared in the paper. that seems to me to be a kind of an open season for tweets in the way of getting people to pay attention. Because, look, there's so much stuff going on in the world now, Steve, that unless you are passionately following this stuff, you're not going to see it. There's just too much junk out there. You're not going to see it.
I agree, but in this case, remember, we have already rained 2.5 million tweets down upon them.
But that was AD, and this is BC. I'm sorry, the other way around. This is after her statements. It's a whole different ballgame, I think.
In any event, one way or another, we're hoping that NBC will ask this question. We're hoping that the other candidates will bring it up. They don't have to bring it up in a context of an attack on her. They could bring it up as just an important issue that needs to be
absolutely
talked about, you know. And if they did, what they would find is that after the usual period of stupid remarks, jokes, and ridicule, they would suddenly emerge. What would emerge would be a huge numbers of people that would be going, you know, fantastic, let's hear more. And it would generate a great deal of excitement. I think most of these candidates are aware that the American people right now are just absolutely in a coma over this campaign. I mean, there are people worked up about certain candidates, and they're going out to various speeches and so forth, rallies. But overall, the general public is just miserable after almost 10 months of this, primarily because most of it has been at the level of a 12-year-old food fight on a school bus.
Yep.
So an issue of this magnitude could be interesting. But hey, you know,
I'm just looking for ways that audiences, particularly this audience, obviously, my first concern, can make a difference. I know we can make a difference. Now is the time, you know, to put the hammer on the anvil, on the diamond, and see if we can hit the sweet spot where it breaks open and people get involved for that to happen. That's politically the only way anything ever gets covered, if the embargo is kind of now fraying because of what she said last week.
Well, if they send anything out, they need to put a link in, a tweet should have a link to the Rockefeller Initiative page, Paradigm Research Group, the other to the Congressional Hearing Political Initiative page, and then a link to the Conway article.
Okay, if you can take us through the links on your guest page tonight so people know exactly where to go. Below your bio, there's a huge bunch of links: Congressional Hearing Initiative, PRG Media Coverage, PRG Speaking Archive, and then you have a bunch of websites. Is Facts on Washington in the websites?
Yes, it is.
It is number 2 under PRG websites. It's factsonwashington.org. It's the second link down at the very bottom of the page under PRG websites. There's Paradigm Research Group. That's the first link. Facts on Washington is the second link. So we click on that. He said, initiating actions to words. That shows a nice image of Hillary. We scroll down, Rockefeller Initiative. You enter. I'm entering the Rockefeller Initiative. And this is everything you ever wanted to know about.
It's a lot.
Yeah, it's a tremendous amount. This is important.
Most importantly, background. The actual documents are there to review.
Yep.
You can actually read the documents.
See, I don't think people realize. I mean, I've had mail. I always get mail when I talk politics, and people say, why are you in Hillary's corner? Why are you pushing for her to be president? Let me say this very clearly. Everybody on your device, listen very clearly. I am not pushing Hillary Clinton for president.
Correct.
In fact, I think she would be a very bad choice for president.
And neither is PRG.
I am trying to pursue policies with the protagonists and the players on the field as we see them, and the probabilities that what we think will catalyze the most important transformation of human beings in modern history is literally now within sight. That's how important this conversation she had with the editorial board and her position in the race pitted against this Goliath named Trump, who could do anything and transform this in an instant.
Yeah, there's been a lot of confusion about this. PRG is not putting all this out in order to get Hillary Clinton in the
White
House. See, it's
important to state that because people think when I mention her, I'm in her corner. Actually, I think she's going to drop out. I don't think Hillary is going to be the candidate, but that's a whole other program.
Yeah, but the point is that you're right. It's from PRG's perspective. First of all, she could win the presidency, go in the White House, and never say a thing. I have no control of that. Secondly, she may not make it to the White House. And so consequently, that is not the issue here. The fact that she said she would investigate it, that's wonderful. That brought the issue into play. However, we want disclosure now. We're running out of time. The list of terrible things on the horizon, I don't have to tell you, is so long it's getting to be kind of ridiculous.
Okay, why don't we use this time then to talk about why is this important? Why should people listening to us tonight all over the world, literally all over the world, why should they give a damn if someone running for the American presidency in 2016 does or does not acknowledge what's out there and its impact, potential impact on the human race? Mm-hmm. Why is that important, Steve? And get very basic, because I don't think people have the beginning clue as to what's going to happen to this planet if, in fact, this eventually takes place.
Well, yeah, basic, but it's not easy. And that's one of the reasons this
we
has
have
been a
time.
Tough, I
we,
know, tough we have slog. As an advocacy movement, because it is not easy to project or explain this. Look, if I was trying to save the whales, it's easy. You go to people and say, look, we need a bunch of money to save the whales, and we're going to run out of whales. And they go, oh, that's terrible. Mm-hmm. So here's $20 million. Go buy another ship and go stop the Japanese whaling fleet. That is not the way it is with this issue. It is very complicated, but I'll give it to you as best I can. And that is this. And in a way, we're lucky to be here for this. In a way, it's going to be a hell of a show. The point is that starting in the early in the 20th century, the human race started moving towards major, not only tipping points, but major dysfunctions, which were going to put everyone at risk. And we were pushing the envelope. The population in 1900 was about 1.5 billion. By the end of World War II, it was 3 billion. By the end of the millennium, it was 6 billion, and now it's near 7 billion, on the way to 9 billion. We've got way too many people. We can't take care of them. They're starving to death. They don't have enough water, and they're getting pretty upset. Meanwhile, we've been conducting all kinds of wars all over the world. We've also built up weapon systems of unbelievable destructive power. And our politics is still, almost 12th century in some cases. And so environmentally, financially, politically, and even in the area of religion, things are just breaking down. And it's one thing if things break down and you got a billion people on the planet, but if things break down with 7 billion people, I assure you, terrible things are going to happen. You can't – every day I wake up, right, I turn on the news. One day it's mass shooting. Mm. Another day it's another mass shooting. Yesterday it was, North Korea may have set off a hydrogen bomb. And this just goes on and on and on. And people sort of know that we're losing control. We're losing our ability. We've created unsolvable problems.
Well, Kennedy – wait. Kennedy made a very important statement. I don't know where it was made and where in his administration. But he made – I think it may have been at the UN where he said, problems that are man-made, I'm paraphrasing, can be solved by men. But those men have to be men of goodwill. They have to want to solve problems. Nobody seems to want to solve anything anymore.
Well, the reason for that is that people, because of the amount of dysfunction – people are losing hope. It's exactly the same thing with the human life, Dick. People go through their lives and they get various sicknesses and illnesses, but they deal with them, they cure them, they move on. But as they get older, the number of things that happen, the number of things they're dealing with overwhelm them. Too many organ failures, too many issues, and they die. That is exactly what happens to civilizations. They don't have infinite life expectancy either, and they die just the way humans do when there's enough dysfunction within their institutions that it is not fixable. Mm-hmm. It's not curable. And people are sensing that we're approaching a kind of terminal state, not only in the United States but worldwide, which is why if you're a TV, movie buff, and I'm starting to catalog this. I'm going to try to get some information out. But in the last 15 years, you have seen an explosion of apocalyptic and post-apocalyptic television and films. It's just staggering. Movie after movie, series after series. Whether it's Walking Dead, Fear the Walking Dead, vampire movies, Z Nation.
Zombie apocalypse.
And then you've got movies. And every apocalyptic approach you want to have, it's being covered. People are just soaking it up. I assure you, there are some very powerful reasons for that. But that's beside the point right now. The point I'm trying to make is that we are now facing problems so profound and almost insurmountable that the century may very well turn into a catastrophe, which is saying something given that the 20th century was not exactly a picnic ride.
No.
And if you want to measure catastrophe on the basis of human suffering, and by quantity, given 7 billion people, right, the numbers are going to be literally staggering. And when people are starving to death, when they're dying, when they're getting bombed and blown up, they get very angry. And in the modern world, that gives them the opportunity to express their anger using relatively advanced weapons. And so we're looking at a century of terrorism. We're looking at a century of non-government states operations, launching nuclear weapons. God knows. It's just a friggin' mess. And, not incidentally, as we enter the, I guess, the most critical phase, which is around 1945 – the ETs turn up 2 years later. So this whole engagement of the extraterrestrials, I believe, is directly tied to the serious problem this planet as a whole has. Now, there have been efforts to break this truth embargo open in the past, but what happens is something gets blown up. In 2001, it was 9-1-1. 9-1-1 blew the truth advocacy movement out of the water, right? And since then, there have been other events. The war in Kuwait during the George H.W. Bush administration, which occurred after the Cold War was basically over, prevented a movement on disclosure then. And so what happens, something keeps happening to delay this. And so we're running out of time. And, you know, recently William Perry, former Secretary of Defense, just wrote a book. And I'll get the title and have it for in a few minutes. And it just came out. And basically what he is saying is the risk of a nuclear explosion in an American city is greater than it's ever been. Okay? In the last few months, the Bulletin for Atomic Scientists has moved the doomsday clock closer to midnight twice. Hmm. All right? And so, you know, this – and people sense this. They're bunkering up. They're buying guns at an unprecedented level. They're storing up food. You know, this is not exactly the American dream. And so the point is this. We have a simple decision to make. I don't know what's coming. Somebody may nuke Washington. It's the number one target in the world. They may nuke Tel Aviv. They might unleash some sort of bio weapon that kills hundreds of thousands of people. There could be awful retributions. Who the hell knows what's coming? I know this. Those things can happen in the pre-disclosure world, where we know how that goes pretty well, or they can happen in the post-disclosure world. And I'm suggesting that if we can cross that line, if we can cross that paradigm line into the post-disclosure world, I believe our ability to maybe avoid some of the worst of that or avoid the kind of draconian responses to those kinds of events that, you know, somebody kills 10 people, you go kill 1,000. They kill 3,000, you go kill 1,000,000, and destroy schools and hospitals and bridges and everything else and create more misery. And this old paradigm stuff has got to change. Only disclosure is going to get us through that paradigm. So, and more importantly, if we don't get it done right now, if people don't get behind this advocacy movement right now, a month and a half from now, somebody's going to do a 9-1-1 event. They're not going to kill 3,000. They're going to kill 100,000.
Well, Trump has actually been warning of this in several speeches, and I've been paying very careful attention, because what Trump is setting up is the familiar strongman scenario. I'm the guy you can turn to when the you-know-what's going to hit the fan. If it does hit the fan and the election is in flux, you know where people are going to go, if they're terrified, if they're scared. We need a game changer. How does the official grappling with this ET presence change the projected rather dismal future history of planet Earth?
The announcement of the extraterrestrial presence, formal announcement, which takes all doubt away and opens up the process of information from governments to their peoples so that they can have a proper knowledge of this, will be the most profound event in human history. It will have a profound effect on the worldview of every living person on the planet. It will affect the strategies of governments as to where they're going to put their resources. It's a game changer where almost every variable or equation that is in play under the old paradigm protocols will be reassessed. It gives us an opportunity to reset, not just a like a reset with Russia. I'm talking about a global reset. It has got that kind of power. And I have never had anybody even come remotely close to persuading me that, no, it's not that big a deal. And so we must – and there's nothing else. We have – there's no other candidates for this. It's not like, oh, well, if we don't get disclosure, we'll do this. Hey, there's nothing, absolutely nothing in play right now that remotely offers the ability to address these profound problems that are overwhelming us, right? We nearly destroyed the Gulf. Now we've got the biggest methane leak in history right above Los Angeles.
Well, let's get practical. If the announcement is made, presumably the announcement has to also be followed by data, by the scientific evidence, who they are, where they come from, the right. level of technology, how their ships work, how they have anti-gravity and we don't, because that's what they're going to tell us.
Right.
How does that unfolding dissection of the extraterrestrial presence, how does it help with these very immediate, practical, and very stupid human problems?
Well, again, as I say, I'm not ruling out the possibility some really stupid things will happen after disclosure. It could happen a week later, a month later. I'm simply saying that that is a superior road to take. But one of the things that will happen, which is really pretty easy to see, is that, again, if Obama announces the ET presence, most of the developed world will follow suit in days. I mean, they're not going to be sitting around going, I don't know, should we tell the French? No, they're going to get right out and tell the French. And so, and there's a lot of TVs in the world right now, which is kind of cool, and a lot of computers. And so, in the weeks and months following the disclosure announcement, you're going to have a billion or more people pretty much interested in one thing and one thing only. What can you tell us about this? And so they will be in front of their televisions, in front of their computers, waiting for information. The media is going to be pummeling the government with thousands of questions, and there will be a tug of war that's going to go on. The government is going to want to release things more slowly, and the people are going to want it right away. And so I cannot predict what will be brought out first. I imagine the government will focus on positive things initially and push the negative stuff down the line. But this, there will be a transference of information. No one will be satisfied, I think, with the pace of it. But nevertheless, it'll be a steady drip, 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 which is what you want to do. And it will hold the public's attentions for months and months and months, which means that they're not thinking about a lot of other things, like how can I screw, you know, my political opponent? How can I, you know, cause problems in the Middle East? I mean, people are just going to have something very profound to think about. It'll give them a little opportunity to maybe start to reset their thinking. That's a pretty positive thing. In other words, you know, you'll get amused by this, but on the morning of the 30th, when I read December 30, when I read that article in the Washington Post about Bill Clinton's girlfriends, and I knew then instantly he was going to be fully brought into the campaign, which, you know, everybody's dying to hear that. I sent a tweet to Podesta. I mean, I have no access to him. I can't get anything to him, but he's got a Twitter account. So I sent him a tweet, and I don't know if you saw it or not, but the point is it was simple. It was, Mr. Podesta, your candidate needs to change the subject. And boy, does she need to change the subject. If you look at Hillary Clinton, she's got major issues that Republicans won't let go. Benghazi, the emails, all right. Now her husband's infidelities, which undermines her women's rights position, right? But her number one liability, without question, is the fact that a majority of the American people, whether they support her or not, do not trust her. They do not believe she is truthful. If she does not get elected, that will be at the core of the failure. And so how do you overcome that? There's only one way. Tell them a really big truth. Help bring about an extraordinary truth, right? Show some real courage. And if she did that, it would change that perception pretty quickly. Now, I happen to believe
But Steve, we are talking about the biggest, most almost incomprehensible change in human consciousness in any time that we can remember, certainly in our lifetime.
Sure.
And it's not something you deal with lightly. So let me ask you this question.
Well, they haven't dealt with it lightly, Dave. It's been 70 years.
I'm not saying that you have or they have. I'm saying that when you're her, you're that candidate. When she opened her mouth and said those things, including a task force maybe to go into Area 51, echoing Eisenhower back in those years, right before the big military-industrial complex speech he made. What if there's a kind of a tag team thing between her and Obama? Obama's rumored to be wanting to talk in his last State of the Union about big things, specifically big things that will affect our children and our grandchildren.
Is it possible
that she's, because remember, no matter what he announces, she is the heir apparent on the Democratic side, would be the president elected to actually accomplish whatever is initiated by him.
That makes sense, but it's too soon. Let me make this point. Look, the Obama is fully in the Clinton camp. They're all part of it. He's part of their world. All right. I mean, they were on the outs for a while. There's no question. But that changed when, of course, he brought Podesta in to be his campaign. His transition chief.
Right, right.
And then, of course, he brought him back into the White House because the Clintons know, I believe, that their fate, their historical legacy on this is now directly tied to his and vice versa. You see, the strategy here is really, really quite brilliant because John Podesta is a brilliant guy. Trust me, he's way smarter than me. By saying those things, what she was doing is, one, she's bringing the issue into play because that helps to protect her if this thing blows out, which they can't control. Remember, they got reporters sending them questions they're not answering. And that can only go on for so long. Mm. So that's one thing she's done. But then when she talks about, I would look into it, I would create a task force, she's sort of telling some people, well, you know, if you elect me, we may make some progress on this. So that's going to kind of cool some jets, right? Mm. People are going, okay. It's not that long. Let's get Hillary in the White House. And that's a good strategy. Now, depending upon how this goes, maybe it'll work out that way. Maybe the media will do their thing and just sort of fade away on the issue and somehow, truth embargo stuff and focus totally on her husband's girlfriends for the next 9 months, and she makes it into the White House. But they don't know that. They are feeling their way here. They have to do it, though, because the press is not going to allow them to stonewall it. But that doesn't mean they're just going to pop it out there. So they're playing a careful strategy. I see exactly what happened there. Now we're going to see what happens next. Now, they have clearly found that the media is more than prepared to cover this, and it's gone worldwide. But it still has.
It still has.
ABC. I could turn up an ABC News tomorrow. Who knows? and there's more articles coming, and they're going to have impact. And so between now and the 17th, they're going to make a decision. Probably we should maybe take it one more level up and see what happens. The debate is the debate is a major move. And she could go to another reporter, a higher tier reporter, and say some things, and that would escalate it. But the debate really puts it into play. Now, why would she do that? There's a very good reason. I sympathize with the equation they're trying to solve. It's not an equation. And it's not their fault in a way. I mean, the reason that she's in this position right now is because Rockefeller turned up at her door. That's just the way it was. If her husband doesn't win the presidency, they're not involved in this right now. Maybe the Bushes are. But that's the way it is. History came to her door. And she has to decide whether to pick up that historical mantle or not. But one of the problems they face is, if this thing is going to break, it needs to break early. They don't want this thing breaking after the primaries. They don't want this thing coming out in July. They don't want this thing coming out the month leading into the convention. I mean, that is going to be brutal, right? And so the sooner they get it in play and possibly take it as far as it's going to go, the better. And if she does, it will go roughly like this. Question gets answered, ask at ABC. She gives a very serious answer. Everybody's eyes just light up and their eyebrows raise. The candidates look at her. All the Republican candidates are going, what? and immediately questions start coming at her and Bill Clinton and Richardson and Podesta, and they start basically talking about the entire history of this going back to 2002. They throw the Pentagon under the bus, whatever the hell. Now things are really heating up, all right, very quickly. The press, the leash is at that point off the press. There's no leash on them at all. Mm. Everything is in play, which means it's time to go to the Pentagon. It's time to go over to NASA. It's time to go over to the Air Force and the Joint Chief and ask some interesting questions about Edgar Mitchell and Philip Corso and Robert Salas and the citizen hearing on disclosure and you name it. And as that starts to move forward, as you know how the media starts to heat up, it's like a boiling pot of water, right? And you're heading towards a media storm, full bore, Category 4. That could happen very fast, within a week or 10 days. Now, the Pentagon and the White House will be watching this. And they'll realize, my God, the Huns are heading our way. Are we going to try to ignore all this? I don't think so. And so what will happen is that the Pentagon and the White House will finally, after all of these years, get together and cut a deal where the Pentagon will say, Mr. President, you have access to this information. You are no longer on a need-to-know basis. On the other hand, we'd like this to be handled in a way that doesn't undermine national security and make us look any worse than we have to look. And once they've gotten on the same page, then the president, for the first time since, you know, Eisenhower, can go ahead and make the announcement. He gets to be the disclosure president. Hillary and Bill get grandfathered in for being major catalysts. John Podesta gets grandfathered in. The only people who get screwed are the Republican Party.
Okay, hold it there. We got a whole bunch of people circling around wanting to ask you some questions and obviously volunteer their 3 cents and 5 cents and 20 cents worth. Mm-hmm. You're on the other side of midnight. My guest this morning is Stephen Bassett. We're discussing an event that he and I actually never thought might arrive in our lifetime. Maybe the beginnings of ET disclosure of someone somewhere out there coming here. You're on the other side of midnight. My name is Richard C. Hoagland. This is a very interesting artist, a New Mexico artist in the background in the land of enchantment tonight on Friday morning, early Friday morning, entering into a weekend. Tomorrow we're going to be doing a panel on the future of 2012, and the ET matters are part of the future. Anyway, we shall return. We are back on the other side of midnight, last half hour to go. Stephen Bassett, my guest this morning. We have a call. Sign in, please, and tell us what you'd like to know.
Hello, this is Mark in San Diego, and I'm a Club 19.5 member, and I encourage everybody listening to join. It's $5 a month to keep this incredible show on the air. I'm in complete sync with your conversation here, but what I want to do is maybe ask you about a corollary to this situation with a negative and a positive. The negative would be Exxon suppressing the truth about the effects on the atmosphere and being caught having done that since the 1980s. The positive would be the innovation and the great minds in America and around the world who have had their patents suppressed in alternative energy. Aren't there like 5,200 patents that have been suppressed? So isn't this a potential corollary to an actual truth embargo where there's actual proof that this giant corporation has lied for profit, for personal profit?
Yeah. See? Yeah.
Yes, a good point. Look, there's been plenty of abuse of power by American corporations that's not related in any way to the truth embargo. The GMO situation and Terminator seeds put out by Monsanto are not truth embargo related, but they're an abomination. However, there are some things which are related. The and the truth embargo has many, many victims. And one of the victims has been inventors that have been, you know, seen these saucers flying around, aware of them, and obviously damn interested in how they do it. How are they anti-gravitic, and what's their energy source? And so it spurred a whole lot of, how would you say, scientific inquiry, a great deal of which, of course, is going on inside government in classified facilities, not the least of which because they have these crash vehicles to work with. But even in the outside, people – and our science is approaching understanding of anti-gravitics and even ground state field energy. So – but that kind of technology can't be out in the open. If it were, it would substantially support the research done on the ET issue, and it would damage the truth embargo.
But if you reverse that equation, Steve, if you say that Hillary at some point is going to do this interesting do-si-do,
yeah.
Obama's then going to leap, you know, do a tag team thing from that, maybe in a year or so, just before the election, that's going to bring everything out of the closet and so-called free energy, I hate that term, but all of the torsion field sciences, all of the amazing technologies, the ability to produce any amount of energy anywhere, at any time, in any place, in any quantity, and not impact the environment except if you want to, that becomes part of a planetary global transformation and paradigm shift being your specialty, that is unparalleled in any history that I can imagine ever having read. So that's what we're about to begin. Is anybody prepared for that enormous cliff?
They're prepared or not, it's coming. But I was answering his question this way, that if disclosure takes place, a major motivation for suppressing the a lot of this invention in the public domain goes away. They really don't need to do it anymore. That's the good news.
Well, it's kind of like trying to lock the barn after the horse is bolted out.
Exactly. That's the good news for these inventors. The bad news, unfortunately, is that I'm pretty sure that what the government has accomplished in the underground, well, in their underground research facilities on this, where they've had nearly 50 years to study and develop anti-gravitics and the energy systems, what they have developed completely dwarfs and surpasses anything in the public sector. And so there's not going to be a lot of cashing in on the part of some of these small inventors. However, once that technology is in play, not surprisingly, a whole raft of inventions and advances will stem from that, and a lot of people will benefit from that, and they will create patents off of that. So that's the correlation. It has been suppressed. A lot of people think it's all been suppressed because the Pentagon is run by Exxon. That's not the case. Exxon benefits from it. The oil industry has benefited from the truth embargo, but they're not running it.
Well,
and when the truth embargo ends, they will deal with it.
If I may interject, Corso's thesis was that this process already had happened, that an awful lot of the amazing technological breakthroughs of the last 20, 30 years basically have been stolen technologies from downed ET spacecraft that have been back-engineered and then rolled out as part of a program that he was involved in with General Trudeau, to basically democratize and salt these inventions into American corporate society so that we could ultimately have a consumer technology based on some of these breakthroughs.
I agree with that, except that I believe that the effect of that and what took place was way, way, way overstated. I believe that the Foreign Technology Desk seeded some ideas that they were garnishing from at least the Crashwell vehicle, if not one or two more, in an effort to give us a little advance, a little help. I happen to think they seeded it only in those areas where we were already working on things. Hmm. And they may have had some impact, but it's not nearly as dramatic as it has been portrayed. It just wasn't that dramatic. But that's the idea, though. The concept is, yeah, but they could only do those things which would not raise suspicions about the ET reality. When they went to these companies, they were saying that they got these texts from the Soviets. So they were limited in how many beans they could spill, and there's a very complicated history there. We'll know more about it post disclosure, but after disclosure, you know, the pressure on the government to reveal what they know about the ET technology is going to be really intense, and I think it'll come out.
If you are acknowledging that there are extraterrestrials running around in spacecraft that don't use rockets, mm-hmm. and then an inventor goes to, you know, CNN and says, I've got a gadget that doesn't use rockets, CNN is going to be so much more predisposed to give that guy a hearing and show his device lifting off the studio floor than prior to disclosure.
Well, true, but, you know, and maybe he will show his device, but eventually the government's going to come out with their stuff and nobody's going to remember this guy.
Yeah, but I totally disagree, because I don't think governments are efficient at all, that they haven't created anything that's marketable, that's commercial, that's, you know, you can put in your basement. I think it's all going to be coming from the Steven Jobs guys in a political climate where the world is suddenly your oyster, where anything is possible. The untapped talent of American enterprise will come to its own, and I don't think the government is going to have a dog in that race, because I don't think they've been doing anything commercial.
No.
They've been trying to make weapons.
It's not about commercial, per se. It's about the fact that they have had 50 years and billions of dollars to study and develop this science. And they are way ahead of anybody in the public sector.
I don't know whether I would automatically agree with that.
Well, we'll have to agree to disagree with on that, Dick.
Okay.
But so I'm just saying that my view is that when they finally, and they will be under a lot of pressure, when they finally come forward and reveal just how far they've gotten and what they've done.
Which includes
anti-gravitic saucers.
Okay. Are you twisting your mic or something? I'm hearing a weird noise.
I'm moving around a little
okay.
too much.
Glenn, you are on the air. You want to ask Steve a question?
Yes. Hello, Richard. Hello, Steve.
Good morning.
When he was president, Bill Clinton sent Webb Hubble, who I believe is probably Chelsea's father, over to the Pentagon to get some answers about this. And Webb Hubble was sent back empty-handed. What makes Hillary think she's going to do any better?
Great question.
Well, first of all, again, that was then. All right. But I'll repeat what I said earlier. The whole initiative that's underway is not about Hillary Clinton breaking down the Pentagon's doors. I don't know whether she could do that, and I don't know if she even would do it, regardless of what she says now. We have gotten in the last 14 months, and you will see this if you go to the Paradigm Research Group .org Congressional Hearing Initiative page. We have gotten more political coverage of this issue than in the previous 64 years. It is pouring out, and so we're going to break this open now. And it's not going to be Hillary Clinton that discloses. It's going to be Barack Obama. And the reason that he will have access to the information is because the Pentagon will give it to him, knowing that 10,000 reporters are headed their way, and they need to preempt that. So that's the strategy underway. And that's my best answer to that.
Could this be an interesting kind of do-si-do where Clinton doesn't want the responsibility of navigating in that first year this process, and is willing to have Obama lead, and then she has 4 years to settle in, to see what's happened in the next year. Let's assume we have a year.
Yeah.
And in her presidency, she gets a handle on the most extraordinary option and problem that you can imagine, but she doesn't have to take the slings and arrows of launching it.
Well, it's an interesting timeline here. If they say disclosure happens in early March, well, that means that President Obama is the disclosure president. He gets a massive legacy, and a great deal will happen.
Wouldn't that be tied in with his Nobel Prize, perchance?
Who knows? I mean, you know, it doesn't matter. Yeah, it would help. Might help justify it.
Wait a minute. Does it matter?
I'm just saying that's
see, my thesis is that the guys gave him that because they knew he was going to be the disclosure president. This is part of a script. This is part of positioning, and you seem to think it's a lot more loosey-goosey than I do.
Oh, I don't think there's a connection between the Nobel Prize and now. But they gave him that Peace Prize because they wanted him. It was like to try to give him some, in my view, some prestige and gravitas in order to deal with the Middle East. They've done this before. But that's not the key thing. The key thing is this. He's the disclosure president. Huge legacy for him. And Hillary and Bill will get a substantial piece of that legacy, right, because of their connections. Mm-hmm. And there will be some information flow. There will be an intense period that will last throughout the remainder of his administration. However, the next president will be the first full-term post-disclosure president, and that president is going to be the one that's going to play a very big role in what's going to happen in the post-disclosure world and how much reform we're going to see and how we're going to deal with our problems. That person, of course, will then also have a tremendous legacy. And the equation that John Podesta is trying to solve is if she triggers this, if she pulls this out, will she still be able to become president or not? If he believed that it absolutely ruins her chances to be president, then it's going to be tough for him to make this move.
But wait a minute. She would never – Glenn, hang on one sec. She would never have said what she said to the Conway board unless Podesta signed off on it.
I agree. But remember, they don't have a choice here. The reason they're having to make these moves now is that PRG has been driving media at them now for months, and articles are coming out. So they don't – it's not their call about whether they're going to have to answer these questions. These questions are coming at them, and they're probably going to have to answer them pretty soon.
Okay.
So – but – and so as he contemplates that, right, he's also thinking – you know, he has to think, will this – will she still get to be president or not? Well, part of that depends on how she handles it. This is a very tricky deal, and so she's added a very complex variable to her campaign that if it's handled wrong could cost her the presidency. All right? So he's factoring that in. It's kind of tough, right? And I appreciate it. And of course, you know, and when the Republican field you know, one of the reasons this thing has maybe gone a little slower than I'd hoped. I'd hoped to have disclosure last year, honestly, Dick. I really thought we were going to pull it off. But I think what happened was the Republican side is such a mess that I think that Podesta was thinking, you know, they are such a mess that, you know, we can probably stonewall this and we're gonna win the White House.
Glenn, it hasn't gone that way. Did you want to break in here?
Yeah.
Yeah, Steve. It's quite the complex calculus you have going on here, Steve. But the question, if Hillary is taken out, she may well be mentally debilitated by post-concussion syndrome at this point. Okay, right. She may have her medical issues, and I don't see Bernie Sandernista being the one to handle it. The Republican side may not be such a mess. Trump may well be a very good person to handle such a thing, precisely because he's not as mired in the political side of things. This whole role of the president's significance in disclosure has been an issue for a long time. We've had stories of Nixon taking Jackie Gleason out to an Air Force base to see an alien, and Jackie Gleason builds his house in the shape of a UFO. You know, so presidents have been involved with this for some time, but have never been that great of players in the whole thing, apparently.
Yeah.
And the question is, if disclosure does occur, will the presidency itself lose relevance and influence?
Of course, no. It'll be more important than ever. Though actually, the presidency has been weakening for decades. It'll actually probably get stronger. But you know, I'm considering all the possibilities. I have to. And there's a number of things that could take Hillary out of this race. I mean, Secretary Clinton out of this race.
You can call her Hillary. Everybody else does.
No, that's not appropriate. The appropriate thing is Secretary Clinton. I believe that if that happens, I'll give you a little prediction just in case I end up being right and you guys can send me congratulatory emails. I think what will happen if she's taken out, Joe Biden will enter the race. It doesn't really matter whether he's on any ballots in any states.
Did you see the interview with him a couple nights ago?
Yes, I did. Okay. He will put himself before the DNC, and we will have a brokered convention on the Democratic side, and Biden will probably get the nomination.
That means we could have maybe two brokered conventions.
Yeah, we could easily.
Because the establishment is going to resist with every fiber of their being Donald Trump sweeping in and taking the prize.
Yeah, look, this is going to be one of the craziest election years of all time.
Isn't it wonderful to be with it? Isn't it amazing to be alive? As you said a moment ago, Steve, you and I never envisioned that we might actually have a competition between candidates to get on top of this issue, and it may have begun last week in New Hampshire.
Well, yeah, one of the reasons that what's favorable to the disclosure process is the chaos of this campaign. You see, the 2007 campaign was not nearly as chaotic. You had McCain, and you had Hillary. Eventually, Obama enters in there, but he's not knowledgeable on the issue. Hillary has got a connection to it, but nobody's talking about it. And McCain, being McCain, was not going to go there. He wasn't going to get into this issue because he's a national security guy. He's a supporter of the military intelligence complex, and he wasn't going to cross them up. So it was pretty simple, right? Pretty easy to sort of control what was going to go down. That's why we didn't have much success. However, this is a free-for-all five-ring circus. Mm. And so the ability for the advisors and the guys to somehow control this whole process and make sure this issue doesn't come out. And this, look, I mean, they didn't want the Bill Clinton's past to come into this, but Trump guaranteed it was going to happen. And now, so could he do the same thing with the ET issue? Yes, he could, but he isn't the only one. Every one of those other candidates is capable of bringing it up tomorrow. So again, with this kind of chaos, if I am Podesta, I can't risk it. We have got to get in front of this. We've got to get on the high ground. And the only way you do that is to bring it into play. But they can't be too bold. Because if Clinton called some special press conference and says, I have a major announcement, this is an important issue, I'm going to engage it, she gives it a huge amount of gravitas, which makes it tough for them. Because the first question in that press conference is, well, if this is so important, Secretary Clinton, why have you been silent for 23 years? And so what they're doing is they're putting the feelers out and letting the press come to them, and then they can respond in a kind of a measured way and sort of manipulate the thing to a point where it's fully in play, not too much damage to her. She comes out looking pretty good and still makes the White House.
Well, the wild card here, of course, is what is Trump going to do with this?
That's the big one, yeah, sure.
Glenn,
and
anything
if I'm
else?
Them, I should be scared to death of what he's going to do.
Unless they've anticipated. Glenn, anything
else? I'm sure they're anticipating everything, Richard. They're playing every angle. They're considering everything. That's why he is her campaign chairman. Look, I've seen a lot of those campaign chairs that work these deals, and there's not a single one of them out there like John Podesta. He's a good man. I think he's more honest than every other campaign chair. He's smarter than the rest of them. He's a much bigger thinker. And so he is exactly who you want to face this kind of calculus, and that's why he is her campaign chair. And understand, she selected him as her campaign chair, knowing that he'd called for the UFO files, knowing that we've been putting this stuff out for 15 years, knowing that there'd been plenty of articles about it. She picked him anyway, and then when he makes the tweets, she doesn't fire him.
So then the question is this part of a plan?
I believe there is a plan on their side, and they're playing their cards, and I'm playing my cards. We both know what each other is doing, but we're not, you know, sitting down and having lunch together.
Not yet. Glenn, anything else?
Well, yeah, the third party in all this is the aliens themselves.
I was just going to bring that up. There's a classic statement, Glenn, that in a war, the enemy has a vote. Glenn makes an exquisite point, Steve. What about the ETs? What's their vote in all of this?
Well, of course, I don't know, but I do know this, that the number of sightings taking place has been quite intense. Some feel it's actually gone up, certainly in several countries. So they're quite active. They're being seen all the time. So they're certainly not hurting the ability to keep this issue in play and keep the interest of the public in play. So it seems like they're taking the role of cheerleaders. You know, they're on the sidelines cheering for us to do the right thing. That's the best.
Are they becoming codependent to our dysfunctions? At any time, they can unilaterally decide to do disclosure themselves. But the question is, to become mired in our politics, our politics is to become codependent to some serious mental illness.
Now, they're not mired in our politics, but our politics are certainly have delayed disclosure. And so the real question that one might ask is, do the ETs have a timeline? Is their patience infinite? Is there a point at which they're going to say, okay, you've had your chance, we're going to resolve this issue for you? And, of course, I don't know that, but it's common sense that could be the case, in which case we'll get what we'll call a force majeure disclosure. And that will be disclosure, but it will be far more disruptive and upsetting and damaging. And so I'm hoping that we will take care of our own business, and then they're going to do what they're going to do.
Are you talking about an Independence Day scenario, demonstration of force, appearing over cities, that kind of thing?
Yes, yeah, that kind of thing has turned up in Independence Day. It turned up in both versions of V. It's in District 9. It was in Childhood's End. We've seen it over and over and over again. And, you know, I assure you that
Speaking of Childhood's End, you know, Arthur, of course, is on my mind. I just find it incredibly intriguing, coincidentally, that finally, after decades, and literally I knew a lot of the players that were involved in trying to get novel, Arthur's novel, Childhood End, to the screen, and finally it occurred on Sci-Fi three nights, you know, just a few days ago.
Is
that not in the same time frame that Hillary's making this disclosure that I'm going to take this seriously? Childhood End suddenly appears on Sci-Fi for three nights. Is that a coincidence?
Well, it gets better, because you see, it was the Sci-Fi channel that put up the money to launch the Coalition for Freedom of Information.
Exactly.
Which was announced on October the 22nd at the National Press Club, which is when John Podesta made the statement calling for the UFO files to be released, which was the first move they made after the Clinton administration was over. And then, of course, that was part of the Sci-Fi Channel's release of the 20-hour miniseries produced by Steven Spielberg about what? Alien abduction. And the truth embargo, which is very much part of that series. And that was in 2002. And then, I don't know, 13 years go by, and as, you know, it's been pretty obvious. I mean, it's pretty obvious to a lot of people that disclosure is coming at us. It's getting there. There's a lot going on. And so who puts out, you know, a six-hour series, which is really all about post-contact, post-disclosure?
You got it.
The Sci-Fi Channel. So, yeah, I mean, I have to think
Isn't
about
Isn't that elegant? Okay, unfortunately, we're out of time. Stephen, we're out of time. Thank you so much for a preview of what might be coming in 2016 vis-a-vis a presidential candidate, Hillary Clinton, Secretary Clinton, the President of the United States, Barack Obama, and who knows what can happen in the next few weeks or months, maybe within a year. Anyway, until tomorrow morning,
about a couple of months.
Our futures panel tomorrow morning, don't forget that. Until then, just keep remembering, third star on the left, straight on till morning. Good night, everybody.